Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
And today we're going to have a heart-to-heart with our pets and our dogs. We're going to see exactly how your energy affects your dog's behavior. I've been talking about this for 30-plus years since I was 2 years old. And it's really important that everybody understands why some dogs seem to kind of almost understand innately when their owners are having issues. Now, you know, we've had scientific studies, and we see, you know, universities and the government spend, you know, millions of dollars on studies. And basically, what happens is they learn exactly what we already knew, that dogs can really take on some of the personality traits of their owners. Why is that so important? Well, if you're a happy person, it's great, because chances are you're not going to have a dog with really serious behavioral issues. Now, granted, behavioral issues, especially with some of the new designer dogs, they're breeding kind of crazy combinations of everything. And yes, there are dogs who have chemical issues, just like some people have issues. And there are probably one in 20 dogs has an issue that is either chemical or physiological. A lot of times dogs will, for instance, when you're rescuing a dog, or if you're buying from a puppy mill, which is pretty much any pet store, even if they say they're getting the dogs from the best breeders, I would never let one of my Rhodesian Ridgebacks ever be sold to somebody that I didn't put through the ringer, and I didn't check their house, and that I didn't make sure they were good people, and that I didn't check the vet to make sure that they were going to go to the veterinarian, take care of the dog. Basically, it's easier to adopt a human child than it is to get one of my dogs. And then we do the same thing with the service dogs as well, because the dog can't help where he is. And that's where so many dogs, and it's not as many as we would think, but that's where so many dogs end up having behavioral issues, because they're in a wrong home. They're not in the right situation. So let's say you have the same exact dog who's raised by two different people. Let's say the dog is fearful, and he's very fearful as a puppy. Well, if he's with a family who's super calm, has really good energy, gently corrects, uses my techniques of NCBR, natural canine behavior rehabilitation, like in my books, and especially in the newest one, Happens, SHHH, Happens, Dog Behavior 101, you're going to see that that dog is going to be the best version of himself. He's going to be the best he can be. It doesn't mean he's going to be the perfect dog. Doesn't mean he's going to be a service dog. It doesn't mean he's going to be a therapy dog. But in the grand scheme of things, he is going to be the best version of himself that he could possibly be. Whereas if you have someone who can be a good owner, but kind of an absentee owner, and there's a lot of chaos in the home, and you have a different dog walker or doggy daycare or people around and different animals, and maybe you're moving around a lot in different locations. If it's a dog who isn't really good at transitioning, kind of like an autistic child, yeah, you can kind of mess the dog up a little bit. But as long as your energy is calm and confident, you feel in control, you're very gentle, but very consistent in what you ask of the dog and what you request and require, the dog is probably not going to be a huge issue. Maybe confused, may not be the best version that he could be, but he'll be an okay version. But then we get into people, and this goes into a lot of times with dogs who are used as service dogs. When you have people who either have a very bad medical condition, they have ill health, they have something like lupus, and not only lupus, or they have MS, or they have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, or periventricular leukomalacia, or they have a special needs child. They maybe are very, very low income, where they're not sure where their next meal is coming from, and where that anxiety and stress in the human will be mirrored also with the dog. So that dog, the same dog that we had that the first family had rescued, or the second family had rescued, now this third family, which still loves the dog, we're saying still a good family, but the dad is ill or passed away, or the mom is ill, or they're moving, or there are a lot of kids with issues, or they're not very consistent with things, and almost push the dog's needs last, because you know how cute dogs are, but the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So those dogs, even though they're the same physiological, biological dogs, can end up with behavioral issues. Not that they wouldn't have in the first place, but they're more likely to. So how do you make yourself a better parent, a better pet parent, better and more, well, let's say more parently kind of pet parent? Well, first thing we do is try to have some kind of consistency. And also, second thing is, what does consistency mean? Does it mean you're doing obedience tricks for 15 minutes the same time every single day, and coming home the exact time of day, and, you know, feeding the dog the exact time of day, and taking the dog for a walk the exact time of day? No. Your life, you have to, and I say this, and I actually trademarked the phrase because I love it so much, the dog needs to fit into your life instead of you living your life around your dog's behavior. Don't live your life around your dog. Live your life for your dog. Don't be rushing home from work or a party and get in a car accident or get in trouble and get stressed, and then you come in all anxious because you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So sorry I got here late. Oh my God. The dog was sleeping. Like, hey, how many times do you not get to eat at the exact time? Well, that happens. Life happens. It's what you do with the energy. It's what you do with the information. So when you come home from work and you're stressed, you know what? Walk around your block once before you walk in the house. Take some deep breaths. That will be able to help you to get that dog more able to relax and see you as the great pet parent, the great guardian or mother or father that you can be. So if you come in and you rush in from work and you had a bad day and you come in, that dog isn't seeing you as the calm, confident, strong parent. Who's going to take care of them? The dog is going to look and be like, uh-oh, you're in trouble. I don't know what I should do. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And that dog is not going to have the confidence because you're not giving the confidence. So if you're one of those people who rushes home from work, and I can absolutely see half the audience right now nodding to themselves, yep, you, saying, oh my God, I do that. Or what do you do in the morning, those of you who have a dog who seems to have separation anxiety? You're rushing around, you run out the door, you throw a handful of treats or a frozen peanut butter Kong in, you know, throw it down there, and you wonder why the dog is tearing things up. Think about the energy. Think about who you are and how you're portraying yourself to your dog in those important moments, which is when you're leaving for the day, when you're coming back from the day. Those are two really important times. So how do you fix that? Well, first thing you do, don't rush out in the morning. If you are one of these eternally late people who's always rushing, what do you think the dog perceives? Uh-oh, mom's stressed. Uh-oh, oh no, dad is really stressed again. Dad, oh my God, he's going, oh no. Now he just, woo, there's cookies. Let me go run and get the cookies to get him all amped up. And now what does the dog do with that energy? He rips up your couch. He goes into the garbage. He pees on the floor because now he has to go, but he didn't have to go before. Or he poops on the floor. So you see how we're actually trying to figure out how to get our dogs to know that we're okay. Think about a 2 or 3 year old child. It's the best way for everybody to remember it. A 2 or 3 year old child falls down, right? Riding his bike. He's totally fine. You know, it barely falls. He starts looking up at people. And first of all, somebody says, oh, go pick your bike up. I used to fall all the time. Here you go. Oh, look, you dented the sidewalk. Oh, better hurry up. That kid will get back on that tricycle and try to go, and that's the end of the issue. Then there are those neurotic parents, like some of us had or some of us may be, who are like, oh, no, are you okay? Are you okay? Oh, my God, are you okay? Are you okay? Did you hurt yourself? And what does that little toddler do? starts bawling, starts crying so loudly and inconsolable because you scared your toddler. If the child isn't bleeding from his head, he's probably fine. Kids are super resilient. So if your dog perceives you when something, you're walking in your house, coming out of your house, something happens, you trip, you fall, a garbage can falls, whatever it is, in that time of that stressful moment, you be the cool parent who goes, you're fine. Of course, if your dog gets, God forbid, attacked by a dog or gets hit by a car, God forbid, yes, those are times you're absolutely well within your rights to act scared. But think about the dog as needing you and needing you to be consistent and calm. So if the dog, let's say, gets scared, another dog jumps on him and he's fine, you know he's fine, don't pick your dog up and start screaming and crying and carrying on and yelling at people, because you're going to create dog reactivity or dog fear or fear of people or whatever that dog was looking at in that moment that he got terrified. We create the problems very often. Our energy affects our dog's behavior. And our dog's energy affects our behavior. And one dog's energy can affect another dog's behavior. The famous, oh, my dog is the best dog in the world, but, you know, I feel like he needs a friend. So two heads are badder, not better, B-A-D-D-E-R. Two heads are badder than one. Because if you have a great dog and you think he's bored, well, now you're going to get another dog, which is fine, but make sure that that dog is similar to the first one, or maybe a little more energy if it's younger, but not crazy, because then you're going to come home and now, you know, it's like one flew over the cuckoo's nest and you're the head cuckoo. You know, you're the Jack Nicholson character. The key is to make sure that you're thinking logically and sensibly. If a dog is bored, they will usually get into things. If you don't have a dog with separation anxiety, and you don't have a dog who's destructive, you know what? He's sleeping. What do we all want to do on Sunday mornings for the most part? Because we've been working all week and we do the fun stuff on Saturday. Sunday mornings, we want to sleep late. When your dog sees you leave, some of them, if you make a big fuss about it, are going to be like that toddler who doesn't want to go to pre-K or kindergarten. Oh my God, I don't want mommy to go. I'm going to miss you. But if you get the child to go to pre-K or kindergarten, all of a sudden he's like, oh mom, I got to get on the bus or I've got it. Let's go. Hurry up. I want to go see my friends. That's the difference between teaching your dog the right way and making your dog kind of into this entertainment for a new dog. Think about what our favorite things to do on a rainy, lazy day. Lay around in our pajamas. Well, guess what? Your dog can do that 5 days a week if you work full time. I wouldn't leave him every day in a crate, but if he's young, and that goes into crate training, if your dog is young and has the potential to get into electrical cords, poisons, pills, gum-containing xylitol, or other things, you have to be a good pet parent. And you really need to consider having a crate or pen or one area of your house that's puppy-proofed or dog-proofed. But once you get past that phase, just let your dog rest. So if you don't have problems, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If your dog isn't broke, don't fix it. So enjoy your dog and enjoy having the enjoyment of your dog. Remember that there's so many options and opportunities now. There's a wonderful place, young woman in New York City, who I'm going to have actually as a guest on our show pretty soon. Her name is Tamara, and she has a dog hiking company that she started, and she has a really amazing, truly amazing ability to work with dogs. And the dogs actually go from New York City, they travel in the vehicle, in her vehicle together, to one of the beautiful parks in northern New Jersey, and they spend the day off leash running and playing. Now, how many of you are right now saying, I could never do that, my dog would never do it? Yeah, your dog will do that if you follow NCBR, Natural Canine Behavior Rehabilitation. Tamara is actually going to be studying. She's been studying with me, but she's going to be studying with me. And she's just a wonderful, amazing person. So I know this exists. And I know in Colorado, in the Denver area, there also exists hiking, dog hiking. So you can be in New York City and Tamara would actually take your dog and take him out with a number of other dogs who would go out. And yes, your dog will learn how to go off leash. Now, not every dog can do it, but the dogs who have problems with other dogs or issues, Tamara calls me and I come over and I work with the families. And so far, all the dogs are able to go hiking, even the ones who maybe weren't so good with other dogs or weren't good with other situations. The key is the positivity, not being happy, happy, joy, joy because of just some inane reason, but happy, happy, joy, joy. We're going to go have fun. So now tell me, why would you need a come command? Why do you have to tell your dog to come? Well, because dog isn't near you. Well, if your dog really loves you, and I'm not talking separation anxiety, but if your dog really, really loves you and is really super bonded to you, why would he want to run away and go see a dog? Why would he want to go run away and see another person? Why would he go chase a bird or a deer or a bunny? Well, that's the point. I want you to enjoy a relationship with your dog like you have never enjoyed before. And your energy is where we start. So if you're constantly the child in the relationship, meaning your energy is off, you are acting immaturely in the dog's eyes, not what my words, but these are how dogs see you. The dog can actually take on the owner's personality if the owner is either a very happy person or if the owner is a very nervous person. Now, a lot of times in, you know, the city, New York City and other cities around the country and around the world, we get stressed. There's a lot of buses, there's trains, we have airplanes overhead, we have pollution, we have cell phones, we have ringing, banging, clanging, construction, honking horns, everything. So if you have a dog who's kind of a naturally stressed and not so comfy kind of dog, there's a pretty good likelihood that that dog is going to be stressed in that city environment. But you want to keep the dog and you want to teach the dog. So now how do we do that? First thing is fake it till you make it. Make it such a believable fake job that you are actually going to be taking this dog and making him think that you are like the coolest, the smartest, the most strong, and the most protective and wonderful parent who has ever walked a dog, ever in the history of dogdom. So if you're walking and you see another dog or you see something scary and you quick grab the leash and rein him in like he's a fish or a runaway horse, what kind of energy are you transmitting in that moment? Are you transmitting calm, confident, relaxed, I'm in charge, hey bud, don't worry, I got your back? Or are you kind of going the opposite way where it's like, oh my God, I'm scared, oh no, oh no, oh no. And then the dog goes, oh, there's something really scary over there. Very critical to know that, you know, here you are and you do have control over what the situation is. So let's think for a minute that you're walking around and there's a scaffolding up in New York City, let's say, or another city, or there's banging or whatever, and your dog gets scared of it. In Hoboken and Jersey City, there's the light rail, there's a train, and it's electric, but it's got a kind of an odd sound. So, and it's a big thing, moving relatively quickly. Well, a lot of dogs are kind of skittish over that. Now, why are they skittish? Because they've never seen a train before. So the first time you do it, do you make the dog stand 2 feet from the tracks? Of course not. You're down the block. You're a couple hundred feet away. So the dog can see it and be comfortable. Then the next time the train goes, you get a little closer, right? You can time it. It's pretty easy. You know when the train comes. And you're going to walk, and you're not going to just walk up and stop at some arbitrary line and think, uh-oh, I'm going to wait until you are calm. Because when a dog is moving, that's when that dog is thinking and going forward and his brain is functioning. If, on the other hand, you go the other way and you say, oh, yeah, I'm going to, you know, try to walk around, then it's one of many distractions. And distractions are fine. That's how I train service dogs. I've trained 1,300 service dogs. So you think I sit there and with my staff now out here in Missouri and our other staff in our new gorgeous facility in New Jersey and in North Carolina, do you think that's what we do? Do you think we just sit around waiting for things to happen? No, we live our lives. We let the dogs fit into our lives instead of living our lives around the dog's behavior. So for instance, yesterday we went into the city here. It's not that much of a city, but it's pretty good. And we went into a big home improvement store. As we went in, there was a big bang. Something had fallen. One of the contractors had dropped a whole bunch of, a pallet. And it fell off. It made a pretty loud noise. So I was kind of like, wow, got a little startled for a second, but not too much. The dog I was holding looked up at me. His name is Clarence. He looked up at me and I didn't look at him. I just kept walking. And then here's your key, people. This is what you want to do. He was looking at me to see if I was going to react. So in that case, I was the parent and he was the toddler who fell. I didn't react. I walked up and down three times. I refreshed it. I kept going back and forth. And he didn't really react badly, but it was a learning and teaching moment. So in that moment, he learned that loud noises don't mean anything because we heard the loud noise and then we walked past back and forth a few times and no loud noise happened. So he never developed that fear. And the problem is that most people let their dogs develop fear and phobias because they don't know any better. You don't know what you don't know. The most common and probably biggest problem is when people say, oh, I've had dogs my whole life, and they're like 25. I'm like, okay, so who trained your last dog? Well, she was 15 when she died. Okay, so you were 10 when you had this dog. So when you were 10, you trained the dog or your parents trained the dog? Oh, my parents trained the dog. Okay, you know what the biggest problem is? The difference between dogs now in the 2000s versus in like the 80s or the 70s, electric fences, which are great in some situations, but electric fences and flexi leads. Because now everybody doesn't have to walk their dogs. The dogs are on these arbitrary, rules and tie outs and fences and things like that. Or an electric fence is even worse because a dog will look at whatever is passing by. And if it feels a zap, it doesn't say, oh, yes, the electric fence is giving me a zap. They know every time I go up here, because that's based on fear. And it's also based on the dog not wanting to get pain. So it's negative reinforcement. So what happens is the dog is looking, let's say, at another dog. And as the dog is looking at another dog, he gets zapped. A dog won't think, oh, it's the electric fence. He's going to think, that son of a gun just bit me. Because where it is on the neck, on the throat area, is where dogs would correct each other. They would correct each other on the side of the neck. Or a puppy might, or a mother might correct from underneath or on top of the neck. So then what winds up happening is you have this dog who is interpreting or misinterpreting signals. So the dog thinks, oh, you're hurting me. And as soon as that happens, you have a problem. So what do? Okay. We yell at the dog, Fluffy, get away from the fence, knock it off, cut it out. And I always joke and I say, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy dog in vain. Don't yell at your dog. Why are you yelling at him? Think about yourself and what your friends call you. Okay, let's say your name is Richard and they call you Rick. And let's say your middle name is Joseph. So how many times other than your wedding and your high school and college graduation, do you hear all three of your names in public together? But what happens if you hear Richard Joseph? It's scary because that means you did something and you're in trouble. So if you yell your dog's name, Fluffy, knock it off. Fluffy, come now. Get over here. Stop barking. And you're screaming like a crazy person. I wouldn't go to you if you were screaming my name with the barking out those commands, right? I would be stupid if I did that. So what happens is you have to think about how these dogs are perceiving what you're saying. And a lot of this has to do with your emotion and the emotion and the person you put out to your dog. So if you're screaming, Fluffy, no, knock it off, bad Fluffy, the dog's name starts to become almost affiliated or associated with being in trouble. So now your dog is running toward the street and you yell, Fluffy, no, come. And the dog thinks, oh, Fluffy thinks to himself, oh my God, I'm in trouble. I better run away. I better run farther. And your dog gets whacked by a car and the world is over, because that is the worst feeling. I've never had it happen to me or any of my dogs, but I've seen it happen to people and certainly dealt with a lot of people with my pet loss and bereavement counseling that I do for people. So well, how do we change that? How do we kind of make it so that the dog is able to enjoy itself, the dog is able to have a great life, and you're able to have a well-behaved dog? Well, the first thing is, don't use your dog's name for negative things. If your dog is, let's say your dog, you have a young puppy and it pees in the house while you're gone, or while you're there, or it poops. After about 10 seconds, and it's usually even less than that, but after 10 seconds, that dog has completely forgotten that he was the culprit. So you're yelling at him. So now you're yelling for no reason whatsoever, according to him, even though you know why you're yelling, although I don't know why you're yelling. You know why you're yelling, but the dog looks at it as you being out of control. So if the dog is feeling that you are angry or anxious or frustrated or sad or melancholy or depressed, your dog will pick up your traits and your dog will start to either become more fearful and uncertain, or the dog will start to become dominant and more aggressive. So remember what dogs are capable of doing: fight, flight, avoid, or submit. The goal is not fighting, obviously. There's some pretty sick people out there who do that with dogs, and it's pretty disgusting and despicable. But then the next one is flight. Flight is fleeing, running. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I never want to see my child or my dog or my horses ever think that I'm a chicken and that I'm running away from them or running away from danger and leaving them there. The dog should understand that I'm here for you. I'm protecting you. I'm providing for your needs. I got it. Don't worry about it. You're cool. You're fine. Instead of fight, which we don't want, we definitely don't want flight, avoiding. Avoiding is a good option. If there's a dog who is running around and loose on a leash and it looks like a dog that's not particularly friendly, yeah, go the other way. It's not going to kill you. It's okay, because avoiding is what we do. If you're having road rage and somebody tries to hit you, you can either fight, so ram that other car, you can flee. You can run away and gun it and try to, outmaneuver him. You can avoid. You can slow down or speed up or pull off the highway. Avoiding is really good to do with dogs because it gives the dog the moment to see that, ooh, my mommy, my daddy, my owner, you know, my guardian was the one who was taking care of that. And I don't need to worry anymore. Reason I don't need to worry is I'm safe. I'm okay. So the last thing a dog can do is submit. And that's where you get into submitting and submissive peeing. You don't want a dog to submit. Submission is not a good state of mind. You want the dog to relax confidently, where he looks up at you and looks at the world and thinks, I'm safe. But submitting is not positive. I don't care what anybody says. Think about it. Use your brain. Use whatever IQ God gave you. submitting is bad. I've seen more dogs go on their backs, quote unquote, submitting, calm and submissive. You don't want that, because a dog who submits means that he isn't feeling safe. He's feeling desperate, even though it might seem like he's on his back and he's, you know, all that. I've seen dogs lunge up and bite kids, bite adults in the face, in the arm, in the chest, in the breast. I've seen it happen. That's why we don't want to do that. We want to make sure that the dog is calm, the dog is confident. We are calm, we are confident. We love the dog, we keep him safe. He knows that he's safe with us, so he doesn't have to take control over for us. And that's where a dog can almost seem to take on our personality. And it is very true. I know there was some research going on in Europe and in Austria, and also obviously common sense dictates that when a person, an owner, gets stressed, their heart rate increases. And it's fight, flight, avoid, or submit, right? So if we're able to, in those scary moments, or when we're coming home from work or leaving for work or wherever we're going, if we don't make a big deal out of it, and if you repeat it, again, this is where you guys should get the book, Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101, on Amazon. And if you do need help, contact me, contact our amazing team, which we have all over the world. And you can reach us at 855-449-9288. Again, it spells out Hi Wyatt, or 855, the number 4, the letter K, the number 9, PROS, 1-855-4-K-9-PROS. Either of those will get you the information. And if you want to go on our website, you can look at United, the letter K, the number 9, UnitedK9Pros, PROS.com, and Wyatt's List, which is our amazing website that has thousands of pages of my brain, my good friend Temple Grandin's brain, some of the top veterinarians in the world. You can pick their brain. We have a pet loss and bereavement counseling service for people, and it's pretty darn cool. And you'll get the right answers, not some 16-year-old or some nut who's in a, you know, going online and tweeting things because he's got a complex and is a narcissist and thinks like everybody's got to be what he thinks they should be. You don't know who people are on the internet, which is why it's so dangerous not only to internet date. That's why we have so many bad things going on when people kind of believe and trust people on the internet. You don't know what you're seeing. Well, this is a trusted site. Wyatt, WYATTSLIST, wyattslist.com. Go on there and check it out. It's pretty darn cool. I think you'll love it. And what we're going to do is we're going to break for the next segment, which will be from shelter dog to service dog. So any questions or any comments, you can always get to us and go on to wyattslist.com. or the info contact on UnitedK9Pros.com. We'll see you in a minute. Stay tuned. Welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. And we were talking earlier today about how we can impact our dog's behavior and emotions just by our own emotions and the way we kind of comport ourselves and handle things with ourselves. So this is how, and we're going to build on what we started in the first segment, building on it. So now, how do you know if you're affecting your dog's behavior? Well, for those of you who are rescuing dogs, it is the greatest thing in the world. And I always thank people for rescuing dogs. The reason I do that is I appreciate that people are willing to take another creature and adopt that creature. So if we are truly, truly doing the right thing and trying to get dogs to be helpful and working, what we want to try to do is to be able to allow those who need help to be able to help the dog so that the dog is able to help the human. So, you know, one of the things that I think is kind of a tough thing is how do you know what a real service dog is, right? I mean, let's face it, there's so many places that pop up that, you know, say that they're training service dogs and say that they're experts and all that. And, you know, really, it's not that you become an expert because somebody teaches you how to train one dog. You really have to look at it and think of how do you know, for instance, if let's say you want to, you know, have a dog, your own dog, trained to be a service dog. So what kind of dogs would you look at? So you have different groups who go around and they'll rescue a dog. And there are a lot of charlatans. I hate to say it. I hate to knock the industry that I was one of the starters, beginners, progenitors of. But, you know, there's so many places out there, and any reputable agency is going to tell you the same thing. Unfortunately, there's so many people out there and a lot of local dog trainers who could be great, like for obedience or agility or whatever. Service dog training is quite different. The reason it's so different is that you need to be able to know very intimately what that disability is. So if somebody says, oh, I've trained a service dog for diabetic alert, and you did one dog, that's great. If that dog made it, that's good. You need at least 10 dogs, and you need dogs of different type to be able to learn. Why? Because dogs are different, just like kids are different. Everyone learns differently. Some dogs go through a wicked fear phase between anytime between 4 and 8 months when they go through a fear impact, and then 6 to 10 months when they go through the flight instinct, and then again at 10 to 14 months when they go through the secondary and final fear impact stage. So if you are training the dog and you happen to decide you're working on elevators that day, and your dog is afraid and you take him out and he has a bad experience, there's a good chance that you as a local trainer are not going to have any expertise to know how to fix that. You're going to try to give him treats and shove food in his face. I don't know about you, but when I'm upset, I don't want to eat. And I breed Grand Champion Rhodesian Ridgebacks as well as rescuing Ridgebacks, hounds, and many, many other types of breeds of dogs. And let me tell you something. When you learn about even one breed of dogs, people will say, wow, I thought they're all the same. Well, they are, but they're individuals. No, there aren't two of anything that are identical in the entire world. Even if you do the same thing twice, very famous E.E. Cummings poem, you can't step into the same river twice. What does that mean? Because people will say, of course you can. You just step into the river, you step out. You step into the river, you step out. But no, it's a different moment. There might be a leaf that was passing along on the water. There might have been a frog who jumped in. Something changed in those seconds or minutes or hours or days or weeks or months that it is not the same river. The water molecules are different. The coloring might be different. There might be a cloud and then suddenly the sun comes out. You truly can't step into the same river twice. So no two dogs are ever the same. You can categorize them, dogs who have a bit of fear, dogs who have anxiety, dogs who perhaps are a little bit too dominant, dogs who lack confidence. There are all kinds of dogs. But even within that, I'm going to train a yellow lab because that's the only kind of dog in the whole world that can be a service dog. there are a lot of reasons dogs fail out, and there are a lot of reasons why people rescue dogs, and those dogs can be good or bad because you have to know what you're doing. But it's roughly 1 in 100 dogs is capable of being a service dog. So what are some of the things that could qualify a dog to be a service dog? Well, a dog who's calm, dog who absolutely is fine with other animals, but is not prey driven or play driven too much. If you have some child who throws a ball and the ball goes flying into the street and you have some of the labs and goldens, oh, got to go get my red ball. Even a dog in a harness, it's going to move. It's going to potentially chase something. So there's a very, very long list of things that dogs must be not only competent at, but also kind of naturally and instinctively attuned to. So you want a dog who's got that calm confidence, a dog who's not reactive. And reactive doesn't just mean aggressive. Obviously, we don't want a dog who's going to be aggressive at all. But we also want a dog who's going to be, you know, really able to do a job. The dog has to want to work. It can't not want to work. You can't have a lazy, like some of you ladies and gentlemen who have teenage boys right now. You know, they just lay around, they eat, and then they go lay around some more. So if you're only thinking you've got to train a dog for a month or two or three or four or five or six, you have no clue what you're doing. You cannot train a dog and make it that rock solid in a couple of weeks, couple of months. It does not happen. The dog can be the most natural dog in the world. You've got to take him on buses and trains and planes and up and down spiral staircases and marble and movie theaters and concerts and busy streets and, you know, parks and with other dogs and without other dogs and having bunnies run by and toys thrown and food spread on the floor. And those things take time. The reason they take time is that, let's face it, everything that's worthwhile is going to take time. You can't expect the dog to pick something up in 2 minutes and to get it, because even if you are the best obedience trainer on the planet, you are not the handler. So you have to have someone handle that dog, which is one of the reasons we do our University Partners program, which are hugely successful. And if you have a teenager or a college student who's interested in doing our program, Merlin's Kids, go on to merlinskids.org. We have universities around the country. We're always looking for more. We hand train you. We put you through a 16-week training course and weekly training and hands-on, about 125 hours of hands-on training, which doesn't sound like as much as it is, but it's a lot. And those are just the people who are handling our dogs after the dog has been trained already for a year and a half. Sometimes more, sometimes a smidge less. But our dogs typically at Merlin's Kids have gone through at least 1,500 to 2,000 hours of training. And then they go for public access exposure. So the public access exposure is great, because that is having someone who's not me or Jen or Laura or one of our amazing trainers, behavioral trainers. At the ranch, we have more than 10 people here, and we have a new facility we're purchasing, a gorgeous place in New Jersey, that we're going to have another facility, and we have places several around the country, which is really cool. But what we do is we set the dogs up for success. That's my phrase. I tell everybody, set your dog up for success, not for failure. And if you take a dog and you think that you've trained him for a week or two or three and, oh, look how great he is at this, is he going to perform for the autistic child who's nonverbal? Is he going to perform for the person who has anxiety and the dog's going to get nervous because the person gets nervous? Very special dog for people who have true PTSD or emotional or psychiatric issues. You have to have the most rock solid dog on the planet for those people. You cannot put a shaky, nervous, anxious dog with a shaky, nervous, anxious person. That is disastrous. Set your dog up for failure. Why don't you? Set yourself up for failure. No, set yourself up for success. Set your dog up for success. So you want to start by actually taking your rescue dog or taking the dog you've purchased, hopefully not from a puppy mill, which is pretty much going to make most of you hate me, but that's okay. I don't care. This isn't a popularity contest. I'm honest. I'm blunt. I'm going to tell you the truth. And if I don't know an answer, I'm going to ask either my friend Temple Grandin or I'm going to find whoever knows and I'm going to get you the right answer. I'm not just going to spout out things. So what I'm telling you is true. I've been doing this longer than almost anybody with the service dogs, with rescue dogs, with canine behavior, equine behavior. And I studied this in college and I was in 4-H from the time I was 8 years old studying animals, studying about animals, rabbits, guinea pigs, you know, everything, horses, dogs, you know, cats. And you see animal behavior. Behavior is behavior, but there are differences. You have to look at dogs are predators, right? So when you get a dog who has a prey animal, like a bunny temperament, where it's nervous, you either need a super confident handler, which is going to be most people who are strong can do it. But now remember, if you have a dog, even a dog who's an average dog, and it's great with you, and you think, oh, I'm the trainer, I'm handing it off to this mother who's got three autistic children and has lupus, you're out of your mind if you think that dog is going to be able to do that job. You've got to be kidding. That isn't the right dog. And you know what? The family may not be the right family for a dog in that situation. The goal is to set the dog up for success and set the individual who needs the dog up for success and the family up for success. So if I go in and work with a dog, and I used to do this all the time with horses, and I finally stopped doing it because it was getting frustrating. But I'm a very, very good rider. I'm dressage riding. I breed Lipizzans. I had New York Racing Thoroughbreds. I know my stuff around horses, and you'd think I was crazy. Maybe I am, but you wouldn't get on the horses that I would get on. And people would always say, like, you get on and like, oh my gosh, every horse, it looks like it's some Olympic level horse. Yes, because I know what I'm doing. And what people did, and I got very upset about it, I had a very wealthy family who was investing in some of these great, you know, really nice warm blood horses and such. And the family, you know, asked me if I could do them a favor and they could do some videos of me riding their horses. And they were all pretty young horses, all warm bloods. And I was getting these horses to do all kinds of maneuvers and all. And they took videos. And then what they did is they used those videos of me, an expert, riding these young horses. And they started saying, oh, yeah, this horse is capable of third level dressage because I could frame up, which is the phrase we use, I could frame up that horse and make that horse look like it was a third level dressage horse. But it wasn't. I could make a horse look fantastic. I can take your dog, set it up, and it won't have a dip in its back anymore. It won't be cow-hocked. I'll keep its ears forward so you don't notice the odd shape of the head. I can go into a show ring with a horse or dog and make that animal look amazing. But I don't want to do that. That's not right. And that's why I won't do that. The same thing with a service dog. I'm going to tell you, hey, you should not use this dog as a service dog. It is not a good candidate. Doesn't mean it's not going to be a great dog. Just means it's not going to be a good candidate to do what you want it to do. Why would you set the dog up for failure? So I see that a lot of times local people will say, oh, I want to train my dog to be a service dog or a therapy dog. And if it's got what it takes, then great, we do it. But very few dogs are actually capable. About 1 in 10 dogs, roughly, is capable of being a therapy dog. A therapy dog, we've talked about the differences, is just a good dog that's not going to bite anybody, that lays there and maybe kisses somebody and you pet it and you feel better and it's a hospital or reading dog or whatever. And it's just a good dog, like a good pet, like we all want, right? A service dog is a working dog. A service dog, completely different. Not an emotional support dog. An emotional support dog is a pet. There are no requirements. There's no training required. We're working on that because I would love for everybody to take their well-behaved pets and quote-unquote emotional support dogs everywhere. But when your dog is ill-behaved and is biting people in the face, which we hear on airplanes and all, and everybody says, oh, it's a service dog, I'm protected, the dog is protected. No, the person with a disability is protected. If you do not have a disability, your dog is not considered an assistive device. If you have a disability and you needed a cane, or if you have a disability and you needed a walker, or if you have a disability and you need someone to help you to get up, or whatever the disability is, or autism, or anything, then you're covered. The dog is not covered. The dog is considered to be a wheelchair. You can't take a wheelchair, just randomly take a wheelchair onto an airplane if you don't need it. So that's kind of where dogs are considered as a device, as an assistive device. So if you take that dog into a situation, and I literally just placed a dog in San Diego with an amazing young girl, won't tell you her name, and the dog is fabulous. You wouldn't even be able to, in your wildest dreams, ever imagine a dog that is as well-trained and well-behaved as this dog is. She's a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and I had her and her brother. And her brother is right here. His name is Clarence, and he's with me at the ranch. And he just got up when I went over to him, and he's checking my blood sugar. And he's sitting down, giving me a kiss. And he just kissed me. So this is as I'm in my studio here. You might hear his toenails. I couldn't even believe, when we were in San Diego flying into St. Louis, there was the craziest jetway I have ever seen. It looked like a four-year-old put it together with Legos. There were four different platforms banging, clanging. Planes were taking off and landing over our heads as we walked across the tarmac. And I'm talking about a good 300 feet away. And this thing was clanging and banging, and we were walking, and it was steep, and people were banging into things, and it was narrow. And this young dog, 2 years old, was rock solid. He helped me get up the jetway. And even the flight attendants were like, wow, that is an amazing dog. She said, you know, a lot of dogs, even well-trained service dogs from reputable agencies, she said, we've seen dogs freak out. She said, that's very impressive. That's a really solid dog. He must be older. I said, he's two. She couldn't believe it. But the reason that he did so well is he's had 2,500 hours of training easily in that 2.5 years of his life from the very beginning. He's one of my grand champion show dogs. He's actually a WISPA puppy, WISPA and Bruiser. And he was confident because I didn't stutter step. I didn't stop and go, oh my God, that's scary. I looked at it and I thought, geez, this is a leap of faith here. I wasn't really comfortable at all with this, the way it was. But you know what? Because I went, he looked at me and he was like, okay, must be fine. Mom thinks it's fine. And that's why you have to have, because I am a very super confident handler because I train them. So I know what they do. But if you take the average dog, the average quote unquote service dog, even a reputable one, you put him on something like that and he's with somebody and he's not the right temperament, you're going to have a disaster. And that's where these issues happen on airplanes and such, because people sneak fake dogs on. And that's one way to tell. I mean, we had two dogs on the plane. And we, you know, normally I travel just with one, but we had a trainer with me from our company, Kathy, who did a wonderful job. And we told the airline, we didn't lie and say they were both mine because they weren't. But it was amazing to see how many people came over and said they just couldn't believe, and I get this all the time, couldn't believe that our dogs were so well behaved, and especially with him because of what we had to go through when we were getting onto this crazy jetway. So the idea is you can fake it, but if you fake it and then you end up having a dog who is in a bad situation, now you're going to be embarrassed. You're going to make it look bad for everybody else. And we are going to have problems. So I hope everybody will kind of take today's lesson, today's, you know, session and show, and we'll learn from it. I want everybody to have the phone numbers in case you need help, or if in case you decide you might want to become a service dog trainer or a canine behaviorist. It's 855-4-K-9-PROS or 855-HI-WYATT, which is 855-449-9288. And you can go on to www.merlinskids.org, Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST.com, United, the letter K, number 9, PROS, PROS.com. And you can go into a whole new life, a whole new career helping others, training service dogs, and rehabilitating people's dogs who have issues, and making a huge difference in others' lives and doing it right. If you do nothing else in life, live it right. Be honest, be direct, and admit when you made a mistake and it wasn't the right dog, and don't keep making the same mistake. Wish everybody an amazing weekend. You are all awesome. Share our stories, share our radio shows and our website, and all of you have a good, healthy, happy, wonderful week. See you next week.